Welcome to Citizens Climate Radio. In this show, we highlight people's stories. We celebrate your successes, and together we share strategies for talking about climate change. I'm your host, Peter Santoscano. Welcome to episode 51 of Citizens Climate Radio, a project of Citizens Climate Education. This episode is airing on Friday, August 28th, 2020. Those of you who regularly listen to this podcast know that when addressing climate change, we believe in the power of art. Artists take on unique roles in helping the public understand the many issues connected to climate change. They also play an important part in helping us process our strong emotions about our rapidly changing planet. On today's show, poet and climate advocate Clara Fang shares her poem, The Children, on why they are striking for the climate. She also tells us about the poetry she reads and how it connects her to the natural world. Photographer, writer, and climate advocate Princella Talley will talk about the vital role of art in her life and her work. She will also speak to the challenges of being a person of color in predominantly white climate spaces. But first, I speak with a professor from Hawaii. In spite of the coronavirus lockdown this past spring, she engaged with her students and got them thinking and feeling about climate change. Climate-themed novels give readers a chance to experience and consider possible realities ahead. Right now, there are a bunch of these books out there. It's hard to know which ones to read, so I reached out to an avid reader with very good taste. I first met Krista Heiser last year in Hawaii. I interviewed her about her research regarding university students' emotions around climate change. She is one of those professors who wears many hats.
And I'm a professor of composition and rhetoric at Kopi'olani Community College in Honolulu, Hawaii. I currently work for the UH system on a very interesting reassignment, and my title is Director of the Center for Sustainability Across the Curriculum, working in the Office of the Vice President for Academic Policy and Planning, and with the UH System Office of Sustainability. It's a lot of titles.
This past semester, she taught a class that dug deep into climate-themed literature.
The class is called Landscapes in Literature, Cli-Fi, Sci-Fi, and the Culture of Sustainability.
She structured the class around climate fiction and science fiction, or cli-fi and sci-fi.
Climate fiction is taking place in the boundaries of our reality, right? No aliens, no magical technologies. And then sci-fi, of course, can include those technologies and space and aliens and leaps of imagination. The central question of the class is which of these is more helpful in helping us to visualize a sustainable future or a response to climate change. And in the course, I give students a whole set of choices in both categories. And then I'm trying to help them choose, and then I put them into book clubs. And I want to model for them how reading can be a way of engaging with others and engaging with ideas and thinking. So reading for pleasure, reading for fun, and reading to talk to other people about it.
She shared with me cli and sci-fi novels that are especially relevant during this time of global pandemic.
Two fabulous novels that relate to pandemic are very interesting in this time. One is Station 11. This is in the cli-fi category. It's about a swine flu, they call the Georgia flu, that decimates a population and how young people respond and create a new world. And then on the sci-fi side, one of the best books that I have read this month, and I read it just probably for about the fourth time, is World War Z. Zombies. You either love or hate zombies. Young people love zombies. Zombies are fear. You know, zombies are just representations of fear. They called it zombie rabies, how it spread throughout the world. And they said, People don't believe something can happen until it's already happened. It was just exactly the same as what we were seeing as coronavirus was unrolling across the globe. So World War Z is really fun to read, really enlightening to read in this time. And it's an amazing book, actually. Not the movie, but the book. No cheating to watch that movie, because that movie is stupid. It has nothing to do with the book. So I tell the students, don't think you can cheat and watch that Brad Pitt movie.
Through the class, Krista also raised questions and concerns about the climate stories we are reading, hearing, and sharing.
Are we engaging in too much apocalypse? I used to teach a unit in post-apocalyptic fiction. Like, as we were heading into 2012 and the Mayan calendar was ending, I taught a lot of post-apocalyptic fiction, and I found young people were just so fascinated in this literature. But then it started to actually concern me. Are we becoming too apocalyptic, imagining our way into an apocalypse through this literature? How do we shift into imagining a sustainable future?
Krista's reading list contains some books I never heard of before, and one that took me by surprise.
Grapes of Wrath, written in 1934, that is a climate fiction novel. Steinbeck didn't know he was writing a climate fiction novel, but that is the original forced climate migration novel, and it takes place in the United States, and it's about the Dust Bowl. I found some scientific literature tying the Dust Bowl not just to the agricultural practices, but actually was related to climate change. Even in the 30s, this was already occurring. So Grapes of Wrath, that's an amazing novel.
Here at Citizens Climate Radio, we've featured various authors of Cli-Fi, including Marissa Slavin in episode 33. She told us about her young adult novel, Code Blue. Early on in episode 10, Aaron Thier read from his book, Mr. Eternity. Both of these are some of my all-time favorite Cli-Fi books, even though they do not yet regularly appear on the list of recommended climate fiction. I asked Krista to share with us some books from her list, especially those flying under the radar.
A book not many people know about called We Are Unprepared by Meg Little Riley. I like that one because, you know, like the book you were mentioning to me, Mr. Eternity, I haven't seen it listed too many places. It's a book about a young couple who moved to Vermont in kind of an idealistic way to, you know, can their own jam and live off the grid kind of thing, but in a very naive way. And then this superstorm is coming. That's a combination of a hurricane and a blizzard and a typhoon. The book is about how this disaster preparing, you know, resilience and adaptation, disaster preparedness, how it affects their young relationship. Their relationship kind of unravels because they have different responses to this. The Man with the Compound Eyes is by Wu Mingyi. This has a little bit of magical realism to it. The Man with the Compound Eyes is about sea level rise in Taiwan. The ocean trash gyre comes up on Taiwan, and there's an indigenous young man who's gets stranded on the trash gyre and intersects with a woman. I can't reveal anymore. It's really amazing. And then one more that I'll mention is by my teacher, Dina Metzger. Dina wrote a book called A Rain of Night Birds. It's also about a relationship. A graduate student and her doctoral advisor. It is about traditional ecological knowledge and its intersection with Western science, but that takes place in their relationship. Rain of Night Birds is an amazing novel for exploring indigenous wisdoms and traditional ecological knowledge.
Before we ended our chat, Krista recommended one more book for us.
I have to mention Flight Behavior by Barbara Kingsolver. My students never choose it. It's a little bit long, but it makes me sad because it's such an amazing novel, and it's about a young woman who hasn't been to college, and this monarch butterfly phenomenon kind of comes to her backyard. She falls in love with science. She ends up going to community college, taking some science classes, and really learning how to engage with her place on the earth. And it's a wonderful novel about education and social class and justice.
If you have book suggestions, feel free to send me a message. Email me radio@citizensclimate.org. That's radio@citizensclimate.org. You will also want to check out Krista Heiser's blog with humor and thoughtfulness. Krista writes about education, sustainability, and climate change. You can find her blog on medium.com. Once you get to medium.com, search for her by name, Krista Heiser, K-R-I-S-T-A Heiser, H-I-S-E-R. Go to medium.com, search for Krista Heiser. In our show notes, I have links to Krista and her work. I also have the list of ClimateFi recommendations. Visit citizensclimatelobby.org/blog. Click on the option for Citizens Climate Radio, and then look for episode 51. That website again, citizensclimatelobby.org/blog.
I think we need art in the climate movement because in order to take action on this issue, we really need to care. And to care, we have to feel emotionally connected to the planet, to each other, to the things that we love. Art is the best way to do that.
That's Clara Fang.
I'm CCL's Youth Engagement Coordinator, and I'm a poet. Yeah, I mean, I think poetry is really just about diving into your environment and seeing what there is to be seen. You know, really looking at reality and feeling how we are all connected to everything that is around us.
Clara is going to share one of her poems for us, but first I asked her about the poetry she reads. What poems and poets move her?
Pablo Neruda really influenced me when I was young. I started reading him when I was 17. He's a Chilean poet who writes in Spanish, and his poetry is so rich in nature imagery and nature metaphors. They're really lyrical and emotionally engaged. So I feel like that has influenced a lot of how I write about nature.
In reading some of Clara's recent poems, one of them jumped out at me. It's a poem I believe many listeners of this podcast will find compelling, challenging, and moving. Clara explains what led her to write the poem.
So I wrote this poem in October of last year. This was at the height of the youth climate strikes that was being led by Greta Thunberg. You know, her words were just so powerful, especially where she said at the UN, "We will never forgive you if you don't do this." And I just like dreamed into that of like all the children and all of the unborn children. What would they say to us who are living and who have the ability to do something about climate change?
Now, Clara Fang reads her poem, The Children, on why they are striking for the climate.
Because our house is on fire and no one is panicking. Because when the glaciers collapse, so do our dreams. Because we learned the alphabet saying the names of animals. A is for alligator, B is for bee. Because there is no planet B. Because the frogs are silent in the marsh. Because butterflies have fallen like so many petals. Because the streams are empty of salmon and bears devour the stars with their eyes. Because there is more plastic than fish in the ocean. Because they will be gone before we've learned their names. Because we love frosty mornings and snow on the tongue. Because we learned sweetness from apples and richness from honey. Because we can't drink oil and we can't eat money. because it shouldn't hurt to breathe. Because there are 7.6 billion of us and counting. Because we remember our mothers singing the songs of the earth. Because storms are brewing in the teacup of the Atlantic. Because we are on Easter Island and down to our last tree. Because we have no defense except to leave. Because we were made for the earth, though she was not made for us. Because if we could send a man to the moon. Because we stopped the ozone hole from growing. Because the sun shines and the wind blows. Because this is the only blue marble for light years around. Because everything we stand on is holy ground. Because Jesus would. Because what animal fouls its own nest? Because have you seen a bird lately? Because we are not drowning, we are fighting. Because how dare you? Because X on you. Because you all knew. Because if you fail us, we will never forgive you. Because now is better than never. Because you want to look us in the eye when we ask you, did you do everything you could? Did you give a damn?
You could read more of Clara Feng's poems and blog post at her site, residenceonearth.net. That site again, residenceonearth.net. If you want to work on your own creative writing in an online community with other writers, Clara has an opportunity for you. She's starting a creative writing action team through Citizens Climate Lobby Community. I have links to Clara's site and how you can get involved with CCL Community. Visit citizensclimatelobby.org/blog. Click on the option for Citizens Climate Radio and then look for episode 51. That website again, citizensclimatelobby.org/blog. I recently spoke with my Citizens Climate Education colleague, Princella Talley. In these days of social distancing, we couldn't meet in Washington, D.C. for our annual staff retreat. As a result, all of our conversations were online. But even with that distance and some static on the line, Priscilla and I had a warm and lively conversation about art, identity, and climate action. Within Citizens Climate Lobby, or CCL, Princella is the Diversity Outreach Coordinator,
which focuses on bringing underrepresented voices into the climate movement and really making sure that the solutions we have are comprehensive and that all voices are not just on the menu, but actually at the table.
She's also on the development team. Now, I knew what Princella did for the organization, but I didn't realize how deeply art has been a part of her life and her work.
I'm a photographer and I'm a writer because those have been parts of me that have always existed. I think I was always a writer before I even knew what that fully meant. So when I was a child, I actually would cut out images of people in magazines and then I would write my own stories about the pictures. And it was usually them like living on the beach and swimming with mermaids and things like that. And then I would be watching movies and I would recite the lines back of different characters. And I didn't connect at the time that I was really interested in scripts and just how people's stories were being written.
Early in her career, Princella found success as a professional writer, but it was through working on a freelance project that she became curious about climate change.
And at first I was writing more like entertainment and tourist pieces for CBS in Las Vegas. I started writing about social entrepreneurship and climate change at the request of a private client. And then it was a key word that kept popping up. And then it became especially interesting to me when it was tied to food systems and the role that artificial intelligence would play in food systems as climate change really hit us. And I was like, what is up with this climate change stuff?
And like many of us, once opened up to hearing about climate change, Princella began to learn more.
I stumbled upon the classic An Inconvenient Truth by Al Gore. And when I saw that, I was like, oh my goodness, this is serious. This is important. What do I do? And I had no answer because there wasn't anything really environmentally focused in my area. So I get online and I got on Volunteer Match, and then I found CCL.
I live in the northeast of the USA in Pennsylvania. Princella lives in the south in Louisiana, two very different worlds. But as we chatted, Princella and I kept finding similarities in our life experiences. We both lived for a time in major cities, then decided to return to our rural roots.
I grew up in a small town in Louisiana called Pineville, and Pineville is about 3.5 hours up from New Orleans, which everyone knows, and that's where I spent a lot of my time. So beyond Pineville, I also lived in Virginia and in Las Vegas, Nevada. Pineville looks like a lot of pine trees, so the name sort of gives it away, but I think there's beauty in the lights and living in these big, beautiful places, but there's a natural beauty to rural areas that I really appreciate now.
We also talked about the essential role storytelling plays when addressing difficult and complex issues like climate change.
No matter what you do, where your focus lies, where your passions are, climate change will be impacted by it. When I came into this, I wasn't necessarily thinking about political advocacy or anything of that sort. I was just an artist and I wasn't a climate scientist. I didn't really feel like I belonged in that space, but I did because I'm a storyteller. And when you can present your story in any shape, way, or form, be it visual, the written word, spoken word, you belong here, and what you have to say can literally change the world.
Another way Princella tells stories is through images.
The visual art that I do is natural light photography. Starting once again very young, I was at the beach in Virginia Beach, and I saw these dolphins just jumping early in the morning from a balcony, and it was the most incredible thing I'd ever connected with visually. And while I was in Virginia, I started experiencing the seasons in like a different way from being in Louisiana. I actually saw snow, and it was like a miracle. And I started like taking pictures of all these things. And I started realizing the more I worked with people outside, the way that the sun creates shadows or illuminates a person and how the overcast in an image tells a story. It just really brought my love of nature and of visual arts and people together. And then on a more serious note, really looking at photojournalism. I mean, when you click on an article, a lot of times what brings you there is that image you see. And then you read it, especially with stories specific to environment and climate change. You remember those images and you remember those people because they are living in this moment that has been captured. It can be disastrous. It can be beautiful, but you just don't forget it.
Both Princella and I became involved with Citizens Climate Lobby as volunteers. And at first, we both felt like outsiders. Back in 2013, when my husband Glenn and I attended the Citizens Climate International Conference, we felt welcomed, but also out of place. Many of the speakers spoke about how we need to act on climate for our children and for our grandchildren. While some gay couples do have children, many of us do not, including Glenn and me. Then in small groups, most of the other volunteers spoke about their love of the natural world. While Glenn and I enjoy nature, it was our commitment to human rights and social justice that initially drew us into climate work. As a gay person in the climate movement, I wasn't sure how much of myself I could bring to the table. And if I did, would other people just then see me primarily as the gay guy who could give advice about how to get more LGBTQ people into the organization?
First, I felt the same way coming into CCL. That it just wasn't really the best fit for me. I mean, I'm also a member of the LGBT community. And I sort of felt like, can I not say this? Or like always wondering about making people uncomfortable. But then I hit this point, like you said, about, you know, people asking, oh, what do I do to invite more Black people? Like naturally, you know, maybe you're asking me because I am the Black person in front of you.
Fortunately for both of us, we ultimately made connections with people in the organization. I got to know Ricky Bradley, the CCL Information Technology Director. Ricky, who lives in Dallas with his husband of over 14 years, helped me feel more at home in the organization. In fact, he asked me to consider producing this podcast. For Princella, she points to Brett Cease, CCL's Volunteer Education and Engagement Coordinator. Brett is famous among staff and volunteers for the ways he tenderly considers other people's feelings. He constantly affirms people for the work they do. He is also a delightful goofball in Zoom meetings. Ricky, Brett, and others like Susan Higgins, Allison Cabisco, Karina Ramirez, and Morgan McHugh, and so many more, make it possible for CCL to attract a diversity of people and then to help us find our place.
I think I quit twice. And, you know, Brett was such an amazing person that he just always would motivate me again to try to be in the space. And it's because I had those same hesitations. But what I'm really enjoying as I learn, because I'm in a learning process about diversity and inclusion work, what I'm learning is it really comes down to being the type of person where people can exist around you as they are. Even if it's not about climate change, they may just want to be around you, and that's still going to play a part into the bigger picture. Now, what the actual answer is as to how that happens as an organization, I don't have all those answers, but I can tell you from my own perspective how it feels when someone is invited and to actually be a person who holds up to your word that they deserve to be there.
My husband, Glenn, is originally from South Africa. In the early 1990s, as a university student, he was part of the anti-apartheid movement and the LGBTQ rights struggle. He says it was not enough to know what you were fighting against. In this case, state-sanctioned white supremacy and homophobia. But they also needed to articulate what they were fighting for. They articulated a vision of the world they wanted to create together. I asked Priscilla about what she's fighting for.
I feel like what I'm fighting for very specifically is people like myself who have come from communities that were not high-income communities that actually had to struggle to find their place in the world. I'm fighting for them to get to a point where their voice is not only heard, but that they understand how powerful it is. The silencing of so many groups is why the world doesn't look a lot better now. There are a lot of people waking up in the morning and saying, these people don't listen to me, they don't care about what I think. They're instead waking up and saying, I am going to change this right here, right now. And I want to see that. I'm fighting for that in young girls like myself. I'm fighting for that for people who are not heteronormative and just feel like no one cares ever or that they're just cast aside. Those are my people and I want them to be empowered. And it doesn't have to be empowered for the work we do. I want them to be empowered, period.
You will want to read Priscilla's writing and see her photographs. Visit PrincillaTalley.com. You will also want to follow her on Instagram and Twitter. You can get all those links at PrincillaTalley.com. That's spelled PrincillaTalley. PrincillaTalley.com. Thank you for joining me here at Citizens Climate Radio. If you like what you hear and you want to support the work we do, visit citizensclimateeducation.org. Citizens Climate Radio is written and produced by me, Peterson Toscano. Other technical support from Ricky Bradley and Brett Cease. Social media assistance from Ashley Hunt Monterano, Flannery Winchester, and Steve Volk. Moral support from Madeline Pera. All of the music on the show we use is licensed. Could you do me a favor and share Citizens Climate Radio with your friends? Tweet or do a Facebook post about the show, or maybe recommend us to a friend who you think needs to hear something encouraging about climate action. You can follow us on Twitter at CitizensCRadio. Visit citizensclimatelobby.org/blog to find links to our guests. Citizens Climate Radio is a project of Citizens Climate Education.